Welcome to the podcast, Sounding Off with Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website. That's kimmunson.com, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. You can sign up for my weekly email newsletters there, as well as we have these great podcasts, op-eds, a whole bunch of information there as well. But you can get all that in the newsletter. I am so excited to have on the line with me again my good friend, Dr. Jill Vecchio. You know her. She is one of the few people that actually read the complete PPACA, the Obamacare legislation, before it was passed. She actually knew what was in it before they passed it. Dr. Jill Vecchio, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Kim.
You know, you were out there in front of everybody on this whole Obamacare thing, realizing where it was taking us. And actually, Obamacare accomplished some of the things that they really wanted to have happen. Explain that to our listeners before we get into our other subject here, Dr. Jill.
Well, I do need to make a correction. I didn't read the entire bill until after it was passed. Until like right after it was passed, because we were actually in Washington, D.C., I think the day after it passed. It's just how the timetable happened to fall for a trip of a bunch of docs going to D.C. So I read it, and it took 3 months to read it, outline it, kind of figure out what was going on with it. And the whole time I was reading it, I was just thinking, man, nobody knows how much this really involves. This is so overreaching, it's going to collapse the system. This is crazy. People need to know about it. And they were only talking about a very small number of points. And everybody was talking about the same small number of points. And I'm like, there's so much more in here. So that's why I decided to start speaking on it. And I just had friends and neighbors over. I think I had 35 friends and neighbors over. And I hung up a screen on my wall and made a PowerPoint presentation and went through it, and then it kind of snowballed from there. It's hard to condense 2,700 pages of legislation into a one-hour talk or something. It was overwhelming.
Well, and Jill, to that point, I served on city council, and we would get our packets on Thursday, and we would have a meeting on Tuesday, and many times those packets had 300 pages in them. And I felt compelled that I needed to read all that and know what we were passing. And I think a lot of representatives now do not read the legislation. There is no possible way that the people that voted on this Obamacare legislation could have read it and known what was in it. And it is irresponsible to be passing legislation that people do not know what is in it. And we need to change that, Dr. Jill.
Well, and isn't that ridiculous? It just seems like common sense that you're going to pass a law that you don't even know what is in it. Somebody else is writing this legislation, number one. There are a lot of things people need to understand about Washington. After having been there several times, it's you kind of want to take a shower when you leave, mm-hmm. just because it's disturbing. So many of the decisions are really, and advice is being given by kids in their 20s, mid to late 20s. Some of them have, because all the congressmen have legislative assistants, LAs they're called. So they have legislative assistants for health care, environment, all these different areas. So we would call on congressmen's offices. A lot of times we only met with the health care legislative assistant. There were a few that were very good, very smart. Tom Coburn had a wonderful guy. Most of them were kids in their mid-20s. Who knew very little. There were some congressmen whose healthcare legislative assistants that I met, and I probably, called on between congressmen and senators probably at least 100 different ones. They'd have a kid that was straight out of college, didn't know anything about healthcare, but that's the kid that was in charge of healthcare for that congressional office. I mean, it's frightening. It's doing favors for somebody's kid, the parents raised money for you or something, so you give their kid an internship or a position as a legislative mm-hmm. assistant. Mm-hmm. It's really sad and pathetic how it's run. And naturally, there's so much legislation passed that there's no way they can read these bills. Who writes a 2,700-page bill? Colorado is really to be commended in that respect, that they have some rule that each bill can only address one issue, as opposed to Congress that can shove all this stuff into a single bill, and all the pork and all the bridges to nowhere and all that stuff gets shoved in so that they can negotiate with each other on passage. So they get their own little pet project. I'll vote for this big thing if you shove my little stupid thing in there that's completely unnecessary and a waste of taxpayer dollars. But it just emphasizes how completely broken the system is.
Well, and we see that with Nancy Pelosi's coronavirus relief bill that they're trying to get through, $3 trillion. And that is totally irresponsible to be passing all these things with all of this pork in it when people are hurting. And so that leads us over to what we want to talk about. Somebody sent me this meme. And, you know, we've heard this, stay home, save a life. So the opposite of that is if you want to go out and go to work or go do something, you want to kill somebody. I mean, what a cruel narrative that is. Nobody wants to go out and kill somebody, but it's a narrative that they're using to scare people to give up their freedoms. So many people are just shoving their freedoms, the Bill of Rights, over to these politicians and bureaucrats and interested parties, these PBIs. I mean, they're practically throwing their freedoms over there. And it's just heartbreaking, Dr. Jill, because I have interviewed over 130 World War II veterans, and they stood up against tyranny and evil so we could be free people. And to have this society just toss our Bill of Rights over to give this power to these PBIs, it's a defining moment in America right now.
You're absolutely right. And someone said on some show or something that I watched lately, you know, there's so much information out there, you can't even begin to try and keep up. They had a good point. They said the left, it seems as if Democrats and the left, they see a problem, COVID-19, and they come up with a solution. And then they keep shoving at that solution, force, even though it still doesn't make any sense. But so they see COVID-19, and they say, quarantine, stay at home. And they exert their influence and force, when they're not thinking about, well, and then they claim they have the moral high ground because they want to save lives. Okay, so to be honest, who really has the moral high ground? No, the people who want to get back to work have the moral high ground because they want to earn their own money for themselves and their families. They want to take care of themselves and their families. They don't want to ask the government to take care of them. Plus, this is a really, really, really important point, and I don't know if I've mentioned it before on your show. How many people are going to die or need chemotherapy because of a delayed diagnosis in a cancer or a serious condition that is completely not being seen, not being evaluated? Nobody, they don't even know it's there. Because of this shutdown for 2 months and no health care. I mean, like I can't remember if I told you before, but just one radiology group, and it's a huge radiology group that I used to work for, they do 400 screening mammograms every single day in the Denver area. Every day, 400. That's just one group. So probably in town, in all of Denver, there may be at least 1,000 mammograms being done every single day. Of those, roughly 1 in 100 will be a cancer, at least 1 in 100 will be a cancer. Then you think about the treatment that needs to happen, hopefully, and then women that come in that aren't just screening mammograms, that actually have lumps and things, that have symptoms. That's a lot of cancers. At one place, they'd find 26 cancers a week. In one facility, 26 cancers a week.
Now multiply that, how many?
That's the number of people that are, that, and that's just breast imaging. That's not even counting colonoscopies and things. So this I find just so infuriating that far more people are going to die, in my opinion, or have serious morbidity from delayed diagnoses of cancers and serious conditions than will ever die of COVID-19.
Okay, so out of the 1,000 mammograms that typically would be conducted in the Denver metro area per day before COVID-19 Wuhan virus reaction disruption, how many have been occurring during these last 6 weeks or so?
Hundreds. Just in Colorado, like, or just in, even just in Denver, like, there would probably be, to try and crunch through the number, there would probably be hundreds of patients with a delayed diagnosis of cancer during since mid-March through whenever they allow screening mammograms to start up again.
Okay, so my question is, hundreds
of women will have a delayed diagnosis, and that time period can make the difference between an early cancer, depending on how aggressive this is, an early cancer doesn't need chemotherapy, and one that does have chemotherapy could be spread throughout the body and life-threatening.
Okay.
And
so
the
when
patient
Polis,
doesn't even know it.
So when Governor Polis and these public health officials shut down the economy, were there any mammograms that were being done at that through these last 6 to 8 weeks?
No.
No?
No screening mammograms. No screening mammograms. If a woman had a breast lump or something, then they would do the what we call the diagnostic mammogram. They'd work that up. If she was already in the system with a cancer, they'd go on with her treatment and surgeries and stuff, because those aren't elective surgeries. Those are necessary. But for screening mammography, no.
And that is what
that
we were talking about.
In South Dakota, they went from, and they weren't even in lockdown in South Dakota. So the place I work in South Dakota does, they probably do 80 patients a day, between 60 and 80 patients a day. Usually this is a really busy time for us. 80 patients a day, they went down to 8.
Okay, so 10%. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So that
and
is
it,
just so important for people to understand that.
Day.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so that goes to this meme that producer Steve sent. It's a Patrick Henry. So it's a picture of him, you know, with the founding fathers. And he says, give me liberty or give me death, unless there's a virus with a 99% recovery rate, in which case strip me of my freedoms, my job, my constitutional rights, and put me under house arrest. Pretty well says it there, Dr. Jill. Okay,
exactly.
So let's jump over
and
here.
And unfortunately, I think our kids don't understand this, because it's kind of like the evil plan is working with indoctrinating our kids to think that government solves everything, that government has the answer to everything. If there's a problem, you don't try to figure it out yourself. You don't use, they call it critical thinking, but the truly critical thinking is not being taught to our kids. They're not being taught to question somebody other than their parents, maybe, you know, who may disagree with the teacher. But the things that our kids are being taught has absolutely played right into this. There are millennials that are scared to death to do anything until the government tells them it's okay to do it.
Yes, and that is that's why we're at a defining moment in our country, and that is why we need to engage in this battle of ideas, why we do the show, why we do these podcasts. So I just mentioned the narrative of stay home, save all, which the opposite corollary would be that you want to go out, you want to kill somebody. That is so insidious to put that narrative out there, but we have heard that, and it's just being pushed. But this other thing is that we've heard, we're all in this together. And that's a bunch of nonsense, because under human nature, if we were all in this together, then we would not have had empty toilet paper aisles when this whole thing started, right? Wouldn't people say, hey, we're all in all
100%.
This, we're in this all.
Yep, exactly.
So I wanted to, go ahead.
One thing that you mentioned, that the reason that I think the reason they have the narrative of stay at home or you're going to kill somebody, they always have to have the moral high ground. They always have to have an argument that, at least on the surface, fits on a license plate, number one, right? It has to fit on a license plate, and it has to give them the moral high ground. So the coexist, stay at home, save a life. You know, everything, every one of their big campaign slogans can fit on a bumper sticker. Bumper sticker. You know, it's harder, so much more difficult to actually explain the truth, that the truth doesn't fit often on a bumper sticker because it's usually more complicated. But they're brilliant that they're marketing, right? They're brilliant at that strategy.
Well, and I look at these people that are buying into this, and they know me, and do they really think that I want to kill somebody? I mean, I find it absolutely insidious. But I want to go to this other meme that was sent to me on this, we're all in this together. And it's like, okay, it says we are not all in this together. Politicians and state and local officials have not given up one paycheck. They have not plowed under their fields or slaughtered their livestock or dumped their milk. And just my editorial comment, when that happens, we could start to have some disruptions in our food chain. Okay, just realize that. They have not lost their homes or their businesses. They have not laid awake all night wondering how they will feed their families or pay their bills. And as they continue to enforce some of their draconian restrictions, not one of them is suffering from their own decisions. They are not now and never will be any part of the we in this. I think that's pretty powerful, Dr. Jill.
Absolutely, 100%. And you just made me think of something that has been really bothering me the last few days. Between the COVID-19 stuff, and then you look at what happened to General Flynn and the FBI, the FISA abuse, all this. They are able to ruin lives, literally, either like directly with General Flynn or ruin our lives by forcing us to stay at home. We then, our only recourse is to hire a lawyer or organize to file an expensive lawsuit, spend months and months, and they will have protection. They'll be protected by law using our taxpayer dollars. Either way, they have nothing to risk other than maybe losing an election. And how much risk really is that for them, considering that, what's the percentage, 80% of the time the incumbent gets reelected? So how much are they really risking? Is Nancy Pelosi really risking anything? No. They're not going to go to prison. They're going to be defended by lawyers paid for with our tax dollars. And yet we're going to have to use our personal money to file a lawsuit against them for any kind of justice. Either way, we're losing. They catch us coming and going, and they are absolutely bulletproof. And I just find that, and they know it, they're taking advantage of it. I don't have an answer for it. It could be abused, but, oh.
And to that point, we have grown, we've moved to this administrative state, this whole thing with Dr. John Douglas and the Tri-County Health. So we have elected representatives that say, oh, I can't do anything about it because under statute, he's got the power. And then you ask him, or I've heard people ask him questions. He's like, oh, it's not really me. It's somebody else. So it's like, who really, really makes the decision? That's what was so brilliant about the Founding Fathers, is they said that we are going to have citizen representatives that are accountable to the people. Now, it's been taking a long time to move us over to this administrative state. And when I first got on city council, there was a bureaucrat that basically said, I will be here long after you're gone. And so, yes, these elections are important, but when we have an administrative state, and I know people talk about term limits all the time, you can't really advocate for term limits when, in essence, you've got this whole bureaucratic state over here. And what we see here with Tri-County Health shows that. Even if, say, our county commissioners or a mayor or a city council would take a stand, and they might get lose an election because of a stand they might take, Dr. Douglas is still, he still has his job. These bureaucrats still have their job and they still have their pensions. They're still drawing these big salaries. And so that is something we have got to really, when we come out on the other side, we've got to do something about this, Dr. Jill.
That's a really, really, really good point. And the same thing is happening, obviously, nationally. We know that the huge, what they call deep state or bureaucratic state. I read the other day that Trump, that's the next project that they are going to be, and partly with justification from the COVID-19, right? Because we've spent so much money on relief packages and stuff for the COVID-19 that they're putting together a panel or a group of people to analyze the bureaucracies. And it's actually going to be majority and minority leaders from both House and Senate, and then a presidential appointee, and then some people who are not politicians, supposedly, which would probably be lobbyists or something. But they're putting together a big council to address the bureaucracy and to mandate cuts in bureaucracy. Now, if we actually think Congress is going to do that, it'll be a miracle if anything actually comes of it. But we'll see what happens. If anybody can make it happen, I think that this current administration is more motivated to make it happen from a financial standpoint, because I think they're fiscally far more responsible than other administrations have been. We'll have to see what happens, but I'm not going to be holding my breath for it. But it is being discussed.
Well, and we have to get this whole thing rolled back. When we have these unelected bureaucrats that can come in and shut down businesses, what we saw with Jen Hewlin, where there were two young women from the Tri-County Health that came in and served her the edict that they were going to shut her down. But behind them were actually Arapahoe County sheriffs. And so we can see that here we have an unelected bureaucratic administration that is backed up by law enforcement. This is never the way it was supposed to be in America, Dr. Jill.
No. And when you and I were doing the radio show years ago with Obama in office, you remember he militarized the Bureau of Land Management among a lot of other bureaucracies. All of a sudden, Bureau of Land Management had like a SWAT team. Where does that come from? These aren't law enforcement agencies. You remember that gentleman who the BLM, he was grazing cattle on BLM land and something, there was mm-hmm. something he hadn't paid
right.
rent or something. And they came with heavy machinery, artillery. They shot a bunch of cattle they killed a bunch of his cattle. They had helicopters. I mean, it was insane. The overreach of the federal government under Obama was frightening, but it's always like step by step. And for decades, regardless of who's been leading the administration, it's always been two steps forward, maybe one step back, three steps forward, no steps back, all toward more centralization of power, abuse of power, complete irresponsible ignoring of what the American people want, what the country stands for, complete abuse of the Constitution and our constitutional rights. We just keep moving further and further down that path.
Well, and Jill, so this is a defining moment in America, and it's also such an interesting moment in America. Because all of this that we're talking about didn't just happen overnight. The Article 25 that is in the statutes here in Colorado, I thought, well, I'm going to look that up because we've had our politicians step back and say, well, it's Article 25, it's state statute, that's, you know, that's what happened. We gave this power to our public health officials. So I thought, okay, I'm going to take a look and I'm going to read Article 25. It's 1,000 pages long, Jill, 1,000 pages. And so this didn't just happen overnight. This has been occurring, I would say, for the last 40 years. The radical activist left that has taken over the Democrat Party, this is no longer the Democrat Party, JFK. And people need to realize that this has gone so far to the left. And so this agenda, where after the 60s, was it Saul Alinsky? He said, okay, you know, cut your hair, put on a suit, and we're going to take over the institutions of entertainment, of media, nonprofits. And you look at that, and that is what has happened. So this has been occurring for a long, long time. And it was not until Donald Trump was elected that, man, the Band-Aid got pulled off and we started to see what this whole thing is. It's like a bunch of roaches that are running around here. And they are making these decisions for their agenda, the life of their agenda. And so we're coming in here. We've got an election. This is such an important election because if Donald Trump does not win, all this goes back somewhat underground, and we'll continue to see the continual encroachment of these people that believe that they are elites. They know better than the unwashed masses how we should live our lives, and they will want to take more and more power. What do you think, Jill?
I absolutely agree. I think that they are no longer under wraps. They are no longer hiding. Well, but when Obamacare came up, 2,700 pages that quickly for healthcare reform legislation, and they had the H.R. 3200 was the first one, and that came out within a year, right? This legislation, they'd been working on nationalizing healthcare for 100 years since FDR. He tried to do it. He wanted to do it. The Hillary Clinton, her healthcare legislation was very similar to what Obamacare ended up being. They have groups of activists and lobbyists and folks who are writing legislation all the time, and I'm sure both parties do. But this legislation is being built up, and then when the time is right, they'll present it. So that's how you get these 1,000-page ridiculous pieces of legislation that nobody's read, not a single congressman really knows what's in it. The only people that read it, and again, I'm going to mention this to folks, if there's a piece of legislation and you really kind of, you want to know what's in it, but you obviously can't read thousands and thousands of pages of legalese referring back to this section of the Security Act and all that junk, there's a legislative summary for each piece of legislation that's presented to Congress, and you can find it on a bunch of different websites. The congressional website, it's called a legislative summary. So there are actually people in the Library of Congress that go through every piece of legislation and they go through it section by section and say, this is what this section says. This is what this section says. So you can know roughly what's in it, but the details of it, you may not know all of the details. And granted, 2,700 pages, even the legislative summary was, I think, 60 pages long, mm-hmm. and very, you know, very dense. So you can get some information from it. Congressman, I can guarantee you they still don't even read that legislative summary. I can guarantee you they don't. They don't know a whole lot more about Obamacare if they had.
It's so irresponsible. So, Jill, we're about out of time on this particular podcast. What do you think we can do? What is some action steps that we can do to stop what has been happening here, where we're just throwing our freedoms and our, you know, everything in the Bill of Rights over to these PBIs? What can we do?
I honestly do like the Article 5 idea, but it requires state legislatures. It can happen over time. I think I would encourage people to learn more about the Article 5 movement. I still think term limits is a great idea. If you have term limits, then ultimately you could have enough fresh thought and enough brave thought in legislators to actually change the bureaucracy. Because ultimately, the bureaucracy is not completely autonomous. It does depend on, Congress could cut the purse strings. They control the money. If you had term limits and funding was cut off for by 20%, 30% for these bureaucracies, they're going to have to figure it out. So the bureaucracies are not all powerful. We've allowed them to be all powerful. In fact, we've weaponized them, not we, but people over the years, politicians have weaponized our bureaucracies to the point where it's a tool for them to pass rules with the force of law without having to go through a vote, which is travesty.
It is a travesty. And so we need to be engaged. We all need to put our thinking caps on, use critical thinking, and we need to be involved in this government. When people used to say, oh, I'm not into politics, we've figured out politics is into you big time, and they have used that power to shut down basically our lives. And there are things that we can do, and we need to be active in that. Dr. Jill Vecchio, these podcasts go so quickly. They're so rich. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Kim. Take care.
You bet. And this is Sounding Off with Kim Munson. God bless you, and God bless America.